Nobody has an imagination big enough to envisage the extent of human evil.
And that you think that's what we're
seeing. I think it's the liberal delusion of the late 20th century that people are basically good. There's no evidence for that.
Right.
I'm not a misanthrope.
Wishful thinking.
I'm not a misanthrope. Uh-huh. You're dangerously wishful thinking, though. Right. I mean, if you set people entirely free. I mean, I'm a great believer in free speech, but that it's an old saying. I'm a great believer in free speech, but that doesn't mean you should run into a crowded theatre and yell fire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm
not
saying?
Really listed,
but
isn't
most
it?
People, I mean, especially apologists for the. I mean, that is its big selling point, isn't it? That there is no censorship.
So is
anybody surprised that it's full of pornography?
Yeah.
Well, what was the first word you looked up in a dictionary? What was the first word you looked up? Mine was prostitute. About eight.
Yeah. Right.
Or something, What do you do? That's
no,
what
sure,
you do,
they,
isn't it?
They were the ones that
you
wanted to
they don't
learn
get
about,
it to find out how many of the lesser-spotted reed warblers are left in Norfolk.
Yeah. Okay.
Most people,
It's true.
Will abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight away, Manchester had the first car crimes. It's not changed today. It's the car crime capital. And it has been ever since Mr. Rolls met Mr. Rolls in Hume, Manchester.
Is that where it was?
That's when car crimes began. When they began? When people started buying cars.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess particularly those sorts as well.
Yeah, well, they were rare.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is it's a poison chalice, isn't it?
We're talking about the freedom of thinking. Well, let me just introduce it.
You can think what you like, but you can't do it. We're back to America,
right,
like America, right?
Okay.
It was built by people that were fleeing religious persecution, specifically religious persecution, the Puritans from England, the Jews from Middle Europe. And the Mormons from wherever they came from.
I didn't know they were founded.
They set up in Canada, but fell foul of the anti-bigamy laws.
Right.
So they mistakenly thought, we'll all move to America.
Yeah.
Where, the land of the free, where we can do what we like.
Yeah. Well,
but the point is, they couldn't do what they like. Plural marriages are forbidden, are against the law in America.
Uh-huh.
It's against the state law. I think they.
Is it Utah?
It goes
the
on.
One that, Utah's
it goes
the one
on,
that
but it's
in,
not sanctioned by law. Even in Utah, there's a federal law against bigamy.
Hmm.
So I don't know how they get around. I'm sure that this law is flouted in the Mormon state somehow. Hmm. Maybe some hotshot lawyers got round it somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know, but the point was, they were very surprised that they couldn't have plural marriages when they moved to America. In a wagon train, I'm talking about wagon trains here, back in the days of the pioneer days, the frontiers. Yeah. And that's why they had to found their own state.
Right.
Really, because the bigamy laws held a place in America. And the point was, you can believe what you like, but you can't do what you like.
Right. I mean, as long as it's inside your head.
Yeah, as long as... Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff goes on in the Bible that if you did it today, you would be locked up.
Right. All right, and that's the reference point.
But it's a bit of a revisionist and a bit of a revisionist rewrite on the Bible, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
I don't know very much about Mormonism, but...
one thing...
I just mentioned it to point up,
The idea of freedom.
Yeah, the idea of freedom and the extent of human evil.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, one thing I learned about Mormons, I don't think many people know. My dad used to really be into family history. We're talking about 30, 40 years ago. And the Mormons then were sponsoring people who were doing... I mean, it's all online and all that kind of stuff these days, but were sponsoring people who used to go around to the different churches around England to look at the births and deaths records.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they collect names, don't they? And
because
they then put them in the big book.
Have them as Mormons.
That's right, they claim them as Mormons, post-mortem.
It's just remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I don't, that more than that, I don't know, but I just remember.
No, I don't know very much about it at all.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that connection there, well, first of all, I'm Simon from On the White.
Hello, Simon.
And we're with John Cooper Clarke. And we're in Shanghai.
Hi.
Yeah. So that was a brilliant intro. I mean, that
yeah,
was
we
all...
Yeah, we were on a thing, Leigh, weren't we, about...
Well, we were talking about internet and freedoms. And
yeah,
I was saying how in the
Again, I'm speaking as an ignoramus on it. You know, I don't ever go on it. I don't even... wouldn't know how to switch a computer on, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
There's too much good stuff on the telly.
Well, we were sort of talking about how the...
let's get back to it. I'm not a Luddite about this. I know the value of the internet. And, you know, I'm sure it has brought many gifts. But there's always a price to pay, isn't there?
Well, that's more
we're
so,
not living
yeah, the
in,
early
We're not
days
living in
hope.
The Garden of Eden pre-lapse.
Well, that's really interesting.
Pre-lapsarian Eden, you know what I mean? We're living with all kinds of... decadence and corruption, aren't we, you know?
That
live in every human being.
That's right. So even the people who you were saying that you thought that the fault of liberal thinking was to assume that everyone was good.
That people are basically good. That if you leave people alone, they will behave in a way that all their friends behave.
Right.
You know, I mean, liberal...
Publicly?
The thing about the liberal in England, anyway...
Yeah.
...is that they never meet anybody who isn't like them.
Right, yeah.
You know, they purposefully avoid...
Right.
...people who aren't liberal. You know, unlike people who aren't liberal like me, I meet all kinds of people.
Uh-huh.
But there is that tendency, especially in London, you know, the bubble, you know, the liberal elite, you know, you can't deny that they call the shots. You know, that's where Parliament is, that's where the Queen lives, you know. So what London does today, the provinces do tomorrow, don't they?
Right, or it's done to them, right.
Well, no, they adopt the manners of the
so
capital, don't they? Everybody wants to be seen as a sophisticated person,
right.
So... you know, what goes on in the capital catches on a bit later in the provinces. And but that doesn't, I don't think, you know. You know, for... the thing is, they don't meet anybody who isn't a liberal. So as far as they're concerned, the world is populated by people who aren't racist or homophobic or any of those things, who think that vegans might have a point, and... people who believe that you can legislate people good.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? That with the, if you pass the right laws and... do you know what I mean?
Right.
Then the idea of human progress, I think, their idea of human progress is unrealistically speeded up. I think the world does progress and has improved. I mean, undoubtedly, the world has improved. Women don't die in childbirth anymore. You know. Also, people, you're not going to poison yourself drinking water out of a tap. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your sewage will be taken away from your home by expert water engineers.
Yeah, and processed, and you drink it later.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not doubting that there is human progress and that there is and that improvements do take place. I don't think the world was great and now it's horrible.
Right.
You know, in that way,
pardon? We're just being told that it's horrible. Is that the...
No, I think it's. It's difficult to read the world when your values have been utterly traduced. You know, which everybody that is my age has seen the world change irrevocably, really. Irrevocably.
And you're saying traduced is obviously that's a bad thing.
Well, I think people have become coarsened in every area.
Huh. Yeah.
You know.
In the way that what the English are always thought to be polite, but now you look on social media and
they don't even look where they're going when they're walking down a road. You know, you're expected to avoid them.
Right.
There's a number of times I've been walked straight into. I stop now. I don't swerve to avoid people now. I just stand still and see if they stop. The number of times that people have actually walked into me on a pavement is unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's
if you live in a city,
yeah,
you should act like a citizen.
Yeah,
you're not alone.
You're not alone. That's the
yeah.
Is all encompassing, isn't it?
To me, that is mad.
And I think, well, going back to what you're saying about liberal thoughts, and it almost is. Maybe reflect on that was when people are within a community, when they're within a group of people, I think the inclination, unless there's a bad seed in there, the inclination is to be good among all those people. The difficulty perhaps comes when they're individual, so when they're looking on their computer.
Very good point. Public opinion is Public opinion is a powerful part of society.
Yeah, controlling factor.
Yeah, it is. Everybody wants to be liked. But you know, when it's just you and that, you and yourself, and the thing in your pocket,
What I think the internet does, it's super niche interests become quite large and acceptable. So people who have peculiar interests
can find
a home.
Then
they have other people that will then support them in their
Well, I mean, obviously the worst thing is, I mean, the child pornography thing. How many people would be into that if they had to go into a shop and ask for it?
There
wouldn't be any, would there?
No, exactly.
Nobody would be looking at it.
There would not be as many people with that interest. I think I'm pretty certain on that.
You know, idleness and the capacity to see anything. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, I guess there's always that temptation to push a bit further, push a bit further.
Push,
Everything with enough exposure becomes
bigger and normal. Bigger and better kicks.
Yeah.
Weirder kicks.
It's true. Oh, I guess, it's...
And also fake news. I mean, good Lord, the way that assault on the Free Press by the Leveson Inquiry was just to me, that was disgusting.
Really?
Why pick on newspapers, which are falling in circulation anyway? Everybody's getting their fake news off the... their chosen source, from their chosen... This is another thing, you know.
That's really interesting.
People don't... I read all the papers. You know, I'm lucky, I have an idle life. You know. But I read all the papers. Everybody knows a news... It's part of your education is to know that a newspaper has... not an agenda.
Yeah.
But has a political shade.
Uh-huh.
And it's part of your political education to know this, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the unions are getting out of hand. Where did you read that? The Daily Mail. Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? You know, the capitalists are killing children.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where did you get that?
Yeah.
The Morning Star.
Uh-huh.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm talking in extremes here.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but... The political tone of a newspaper is something that a reasonably intelligent person can ascertain very quickly. I mean, I knew that the Daily Express was a Tory paper and the Daily Mirror was a Labour Party paper when I was about six.
Uh-huh.
But these days, it's just they're all liars. If you want the truth,
right. That, well, that's...
Check up what some nutter thinks on the fucking... You know. The point is, a newspaper... The difference between the web... News on the web... On a computer from your chosen source. The one that's going to back up your every prejudice.
Yeah.
That you yourself has chosen.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can lie through their teeth. Who's going to take them to court? Who is it anyway? Who is it then? How can you take them?
That's
how
true.
Can you gainsay anything that's on that? But a newspaper can be sued.
Yeah, it's true.
If yeah. somebody prints a blatant
untruth.
You've
got to have a lot of money to do it, but it can
You
be.
Know,
yeah.
they print corrections in every paper, that every day, in every daily paper, every day there are clarifications and corrections where somebody's lawyer.
Yeah. Said
As said,
yeah.
But Elton John got $2 million out of The Sun in the 70s.
Well, Leveson was about intrusion into individuals' private lives, though, wasn't it?
Ostensibly,
yeah.
But look
Which
who's running
that
hats.
That can't be right.
Up, then, pardon?
That can't be right.
No, I think they used that as the key in the lock to destroy newspapers, Frank. I really do. You know, who started off it? Hugh Grant. He's not had such a good, but not always had a consistently good press, has he? You know,
no,
that's how
true.
He got. That's how he got. We better not put this on, actually.
Okay.
I'm going to get to that.
Well, let's skip on.
But
on
all
that.
I'm saying is, to me, it's disgraced show business people who don't like their cocaine orgies written about.
Not Hugh Grant.
Just, let's leave it there. Don't mention
unnamed,
Hugh Grant, but let's just say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hacked Off was started by disgruntled celebrities who don't like their cocaine orgies
right.
to divulged to the public.
Okay.
But, you know, why pick on the press when the net can say what it likes?
I mean, you can...
They're hampered by the laws of libel.
Yeah. So, I mean, online...
There are no such strictures.
Well, there is. Libel works on the internet as well.
Does it? Are you sure?
Absolutely.
But who do you get? How do you get them? How do you track them down?
That's the difficulty.
How do you track them down? It's very expensive, isn't it? We're paying
for it. All legal action's expensive.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And they come out of the taxpayers' money when it's down to things like that, don't they? Surely.
I think it's between the individual taking the action and the newspaper.
Really?
And then the other one, they cover costs and all that kind of stuff between each other. That's why it's so ridiculously expensive.
You know better than I.
Well, you're in the publishing game, you've got to know about these things. But, well, as fascinating as that is, but and trying to avoid legal action.
But the Leveson Inquiry, I say lay off the fritz. The press was always brutal in this country.
That's true.
Right, since they started. It's part of their charm.
Right.
Part of their charm. When the first, 300 years ago, it was suggested that the rapacious press must be
really
reined
in. So written 300 years ago, and
when that
today,
happened, yeah. there were riots on the streets. MPs were pulled out of their carriages and roughed up.
For trying to control the press
by the public.
Wow. Okay. Because they believed so much in what the press was doing.
They wanted to know about it.
Right.
You know, it was the early days of mass literacy. You know, papers were becoming very popular among the, well, the middle class, let's say. The new middle class.
Right. The potential liberal elite.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in fact, yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm... Can I pull you to tonight?
Let's get off this.
No, it's great. I love that. And we should do more of this. But I did want to ask about the tour and the book name.
Luckiest Guy Alive.
It's a really soft.
Well, I
question.
Thought it's a nice antidote to all the misery memoirs that you see on the shelves and all these tragic backstories and shit, you know.
Right.
Because I always imagine, people always expect me to come up, because I've been a junkie and things like that. You know what I mean? So I really want to fight shy of that sort of misery memoir and, you know. Believe me, I the way things have turned out.
Yeah.
I couldn't have planned it any better.
Right.
I'm glad
I did.
You're
happy with life as it is, hence the title.
Oh, I wouldn't swap lives with any man alive.
Right. God, that's fantastic, isn't it?
How many times?
How
often can you say that?
Yeah, when did you realise that?
Well, when I met my wife and got a beautiful daughter, nice house in Essex.
Yeah.
I ain't got nothing to complain about. Everybody likes me. And, my shows are selling out big halls.
Right.
You know, I've just been around the world.
Have you?
Yeah.
Right, what, on the sort of private tour? Or
yeah, just doing, you know, well, before
doing
this
readings.
Came out, you know, just doing the last of my old act.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, right. Did America, Canada, New Zealand, Australia.
Yeah. And do you get to see
the place?
I went
around
the
world in 4 weeks.
Did you? Yeah. So that kind of answers my question. I guess you didn't really get to see the places you're going to.
These are places that I've been before, though.
Okay.
And, you know, it's really a place is the people, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
So it was nice to look up old friends, especially in New York.
Right, yeah. And what's New York? I haven't been to New York for years. Is it still as busy? Is it more busy? Or?
Well, how long is it since you've been there? It's Deseret now. It's not like it was when I was there in the late 70s. I mean, there was a garbage strike, wasn't
there?
It was,
yeah. Well, same in London. I mean, Leicester Square, the square in the middle, was full of rubbish in the 70s. I remember that. But
New York, yes, fabulous. And, you know,
you like the energy there?
Yeah, it's just always New York, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, fabulous. I love the place.
It's funny, I think you've got to find the right corner because, you know, they say it's a city that never sleeps, but I have been there and I must have been in the wrong part of town because I couldn't find anything to do. But I guess it's...
Well, you're in the wrong neighbourhood, yeah.
Exactly. That might be the... No, that's the clue. So the you know what's I met up with a friend yesterday. I haven't seen him probably 20 years, and I've known him 35. And I said to him, I was meeting you today. He's a massive. He's always one of the shared passions we've had is music, going back a long way. And he told me a little story about seeing you. Do you mind if I recount it?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
He went to see if this is in 81, and he wondered if you, the chances you're remembering this are tiny. It's not about meeting him, it's about an event that happened. That it was at Alexandra Park, you're supporting the Slits and the pop group.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Do you? All right, okay.
Alexandra Palace.
I think Alexandra Park and Palace are the same. I can't remember exactly the distinction. But I think the park goes round the Palace, doesn't it?
Was it in London?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was outdoors. It was a week before it burnt down.
Was it? Disconnected.
Yes, it was a week before it burnt down. It was a pop, with the pop group, the Slits, the Raincoats.
Right.
The Old Pairs.
Right.
That's right, all them, it was quite a it was sort of the political wing of punk, which came after punk, really.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Gang of Four, sort of the ones that had a bit of a left-wing agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
They were very good, you know, yes, I remember it very well. I remember it very well. Because I've only done it twice. And I did it again in, Alexandra Palace. I did it again at the end of July this year.
Right.
And so it's very much in my mind again, you know, because I said to my man, yeah, you know, it's exactly at 1981 the last time I did it.
Right.
So yes, I do. So yes, I absolutely do remember it.
Well, he was saying, this is the story. It's his first gig in London. So
was he
16 at the time. Is it in the audience?
Oh, right, he was in the audience. Yeah.
And he said midway through your set, there's two blokes in front of him started having a disagreement. Both of them were drunk, and one of them was trying to placate the other one. And then all of a sudden, bottled the guy. And then his recollection was that you'd seen the incident from the stage, and, you know, like, well, what the hell's going on?
I remember it.
And then he said both the guy that got bottled and the one who did it disappeared from the audience. Then 5 minutes later, without explanation, the guy got bottled stumbled onto stage.
That's right, yeah.
And he said, well, this is the bit that he remembers, was... He staggered across the stage towards you. You stopped, and he grabbed hold of your shoulder. Blood all over your...
All over my suit. I remember
exactly
that.
The blue suit you were
wearing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And you sort of took him quietly off stage. I guess the guy must have been in a real mess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do remember this. Yeah.
And
not the sort of thing that happens every day, even in the world of punk rock.
Well, he was saying that for him, it being his first gig in London, he was like, he's looking forward to going to hundreds of gigs, and it's like, is this what it's like every
time?
Yeah,
well, that would put you off, wouldn't it? Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. I'd, That just seems fantastic that you remembered
it. Oh, yeah, 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 that, I remember that, yeah, yeah.
Disturbing to experience.
Anything that fucks up a soup.
Right.
I never forget that, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Blood,
did it dry clean out?
Blood on my soup. Jesus. Tragedy. Well, what a tragedy. I was more worried about that than him, I think.
Right. Didn't lead to a new poem about blood on my soup.
He was looked after. Tell him, rest assured, he was looked after by some very competent ambulance people.
Right. Well, I mean, what he was saying there was...
I think somebody must have helped him onto the stage to get out, you know... to get help.
Right.
You know, otherwise they would have had to have took him through the crowd, you know what I mean, to the ambulance.
I guess in those days it was less crowd and performers separated as well, wasn't it? So it wouldn't have been, oh, there's a load of beefy bouncers stopping people getting on stage. It would have been far more fluid. There wasn't so much delineation between performer and audience, was
there? Not in the punk world, no. Uh-huh. No, but a gig that size, there would have been security.
Right. Okay. Oh, it was a big gig, was it?
Oh, yeah, it was big.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people there, as I remember it. Right. Hell of a lot of people, yeah.
Well, that's remarkable you remember. His name's Robert Watts. He'll be very excited.
Robert Watts, yes, sir. Robert, yes, I do remember.
Right. Yeah. And then so his thinking went on from there, and thinking about you from those... punk days.
Those blood-drenched days.
Sounds dramatic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To now, you know, people refer to you as, I don't know what you think about this, but, you know, national treasure.
Oh, I hate that. Sounds like on your deathbed or something, doesn't it?
Or you know, highly respected.
Yeah, like, that'll do.
You're fine with that one.
That'll do.
Elder statesman, how are you with that one?
No, I don't like that either. Right. Anything that accentuates my age is a bit of a pain.
Upping the skills
it's just a pain in the arse. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Whenever anybody, it's all like, he's great for his age. You know, there's always that subtext, for his age. Like, I don't need anybody to cut me no slack there, you know. I'm better than now. In terms of being the poetry, right, I'm miles better now than... I was then. The stuff I write now.
And that's experience.
The stuff I write now is much, much, much better than that.
Because of the experience of writing, or life has brought that.
The more you do something, the better at it you get. Yeah. Obviously, it ain't, you know, there's no shortcut.
Yeah.
You know, there's no shortcut to that. The more you do it, the better you get, naturally.
Keep practicing.
Pardon?
So the rule is...
Keep at it. Yeah.
So, I mean, what about that journey from those days to now? Or that sort of quite
well,
crazy...
Well, a journey would suggest that there was some kind of organisation involved. You know what I mean? But that's... I wouldn't be able to hand on my heart say that... all this was planned, or even that I deserve the wonderful life. That's why the luckiest guy alive, you know, really.
Right.
I wouldn't emulate my lifestyle choices and expect to come out on top.
Right.
Somebody up there likes me.
Right. So what about, tell me about the really early days for you. Who was the first performer you saw?
The first performer I saw was Bob Hope at the Palace Theatre in 1958.
Right.
And so I've always looked upon what I do as sort of a branch of show business. You know, I figured, you know, like a lot of people in the early rock and roll years, I figured, how long's this going to last?
Uh-huh.
You know, I've hitched my horse to this wagon. You know, how long's it going to roll?
Yeah.
You know, you have to think, you know, so I just thought, well, what I do really, it's, there's always been poetry around ever since the days of literacy.
Uh-huh.
You know, even before that, there was probably an oral tradition of rhyming couplets and songs.
Yeah.
Songs. What are songs?
Yeah.
There's a poetic element in songs. In fact, it's an interesting point. That's when I first became aware of lyrics. pre-rock and roll, you know, the great American songbook, you know, Cole Porter, Johnny Mercer, Julie Stein, Jerome Kern, Sammy Kahn.
Right.
People like that that wrote for Sinatra and Bing Crosby and Ella Fitzgerald, people like that. You know the standards.
Mm.
You know, I got you under my skin, things like that.
Right.
You know, I used to listen to those words when I was a kid. I was very taken with, as you say, as I was saying, you know, I'm a very Americanized person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the days of the suburban cinema, there were 8 movie houses within walking distance of where I lived. So, you know, the Hollywood thing was hardwired in very early on. So, naturally, I was a big fan of Bob Hope. I'd seen him in the movie Son of Paleface with Roy Rogers and Jane Russell, you know, great film. So I thought that's the kind of comedy he does. I thought he was a kind of slapstick vaudevillian, you know. That's what he does on that movie, you know. And what I didn't know was this urbane stand-up guy, you know, that didn't even tell jokes, really, just sort of made people laugh somehow.
Right.
But it was never, there was an Englishman, an Irishman, and a Scot. You know, I knew about jokes, you know. But I knew about the English music hall tradition, you know, where somebody had a bit of a gimmick or, a little bit of slapstick. Which Bob did, you know, Bob was English originally, moved out there as a boy, you know.
Yeah.
But he did have a tradition of clowning, vaudeville clown, you know, falling on his ass, you know, custard pie.
Mm.
And things like that, but he seamlessly became this smooth operator that's, let's face it, he's the forerunner of Jerry Seinfeld and all those people, I think. You know, there were a few of them in the States, though, as I came to see, but it was Bob that, he was the key in the door, you know. And I went to see him at the Palace Theatre, and there was this smart guy, you know, smart ass. There was only one, and all his routines, all his riffs, all his routines, they were all around adult themes like golf, booze, divorce, alimony. I was 9.
Right.
but such is the infectiousness of human laughter that everybody else was cracking up, and I just couldn't resist it. It was just them laughing made me laugh.
Yeah.
And there was only one guy in that hall not laughing. Not even smiling, and that was Bob Hope.
Right.
And that was just so potent to me. I thought, how can you keep a straight face when everybody around you is cracking up?
Yeah.
And that just became my ambition to have that ability to do that, you know.
Right.
And I'd try routines at school. Very early on, I was really good at telling gags.
Uh-huh.
People would laugh even though the gag was crap.
Right, it's the delivery.
Do you know what I mean? It was, that's the way I tell it. You know.
Timing.
But I got that, it's the way you tell them. I got that from Bob, no doubt about it. After that, I got into, you know, Jack Benny and all those other guys.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Henny Youngman, all those Catskills comics, you know, those New York comedians. Henny Youngman, as I say, great one-liner merchant, you know. Misogynistic, you know, mild misogynism, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Misogyny,
uh-huh.
You know, which was very much a part of the...
Right, I guess comedy was a lot of that in comedy those days.
There was, yeah. It was always at the expense of their wives, their mother-in-laws,
Hilarious,
I thought it was fabulous, yeah.
So did you ever see Bob Hope again?
No, not live. No, I've seen all his pictures, and I still think he was, I wasn't wrong about him. He still makes me laugh. I watch his routines a million times, still funny.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because quite often...
Great stuff.
...humour does have...
A shelf life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's of its time, yeah.
But I think Bob stacks up real well.
Uh-huh.
I think it stacks up real well because it comes from his character.
Yeah.
It isn't satire. You know what I mean? It's not wedded to the its time so much, really, because Bob deals with the... He's obviously a Republican. He made, that was went without saying, you know, you could, it was just implicit. Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
You just knew he was a Republican.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike a lot of people in show, very unusual in show business, right. Actually. Even then, you know, most people in show business are liberals.
Right.
In the American sense, you know.
Yeah.
You know, lefty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, most of them.
Yeah.
Same as most people that made those movies, you know, they were kind of had a...
Yeah.
If you look at an old western, you look at a western from say 1952 that features Indians, they're actually quite sympathetic to their plight.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
If you look at them now, very rarely are they triumphalists.
Right. I'd have thought it'd been about conquering and controlling. But
very
and...
rarely. There's always a note of sadness, as Chief Red Cloud said.
Right.
He could forgive the white man for introducing whiskey. Because he introduced the horse. The horse improved the lot of the Native American Indian more than any social legislation. The introduction of the horse by the Spanish.
So the American Indians didn't have horses before?
There were no horses in America before the Spanish.
Wow, I had no idea.
They're Arab horses.
Are they?
Mustangs are Arab horses.
I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah, they're short back. They've got a short back.
Right.
They're not big horses, but they're very tough.
So were they always there for the purpose of serving man? Or did they, you know, you sort of see sometimes these...
Wild horses.
Of wild horses running
around. Well, they're just, you know, strays and what have you, you know.
Right.
Bred over the years and...
I
the
just
Darwinian assume... thing kicked in, you know, the weak ones died, the strong ones, you know, but the blood stock was improved by the...
Right.
By their harsh existence, you know.
Yeah.
No, you look at them cowboys, they go rounding them up and then they have to break them in.
Yeah. Well, I thought that they were just wild horses knocking around in America.
No, the Indians didn't have horses. That's why they...
I can see why that's such a...
You know how they used to kill buffaloes? They used to run... They used to stampede them. Run them... I mean, from an animal welfare point of view, you know... They used to stampede a herd of buffaloes, which, you know, ran into the thousands. And they would head them towards a cliff.
Wow.
And this is when they had horses, when they got horses. And about 100 of the buffalo would fall down into this ravine. And they would just eat what they could of one of those buffaloes.
Right.
So they'd kill 100. But they didn't preserve meat or anything.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
You know, they could just eat it till it went off. You know what I mean?
God. That seemed... It's a little bit of imbalance there.
But with
it?
The introduction of the horse, they could go into the middle of the herd. They could
and
ride into the
off.
Middle of the herd.
Right, right.
Kill one of them.
Aha.
Drag it out.
Right.
And
right.
The rest of them wouldn't even stampede. They'd just carry on. Like, you know, like wildebeest, when a lion separates one out and eats it.
Yeah.
They all stop running then, don't they?
Right.
And start eating grass again.
Yeah.
Same with the buffalo, you know.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I don't think I'd be learning about buffalo.
So the introduction of the horse, you know, just improved their life,
I
their living
imagine.
Standards.
I mean, it's like sort of the equivalent of
and
foot to something
conserve
else.
The buffalo.
Right.
But that was the Spanish that did that in the on the west coast of America, you know.
Right.
But when they had horses, because, I mean, no Indian tribe ever met another Indian tribe, really, the size of America, you know.
Yeah.
A Comanche would never have met a Mohawk.
Right.
There weren't enough.
You couldn't
travel that distance. They didn't live long enough to be able to cover that distance.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, they were all horse, right? You know, Deseret, you know, Mod Cons, horses.
Right. Yeah.
And the Mohawks and what have you, and the Manhattan Indians were all stalking on foot.
Right.
Different cultures. I mean, it isn't a culture, is it, the American, Native American? It's.
I don't know. How would you define
regional,
it?
Isn't it?
Right.
Some of them grew corn.
Right. Okay.
The Apaches lived in a desert. They were just thieves and
right. Right, I had no idea. Is this something you've looked into? Or?
Well, I've always been interested in the West.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm a big, big fan on cowboy movies.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I've just been watching The Man from Laramie before you came, actually, on film four.
Right.
Jimmy Stewart.
Right.
Oh, I love cowboy films.
Right. Hey, I've got a present for you.
Oh, great.
Yeah, let's see. It's a little...
So, yeah, Bob, this is the second print. Thank you very much.
Is it?
Kid.
What was the one you had before?
A book of Alfred Lord Tennyson by tonight's promoter.
Right.
Big fan, like Tennyson.
Have you been out to Freshwater?
Pardon?
You've been to Freshwater for the Tennyson?
No, I haven't. He told me about that.
Uh-huh.
He told me about that, yeah.
Well, this, I know you've got a love of words, and maybe there's a couple of words there that are new to you. That I thought you might...
Make Vectis Kurt again. Gert again.
Yeah.
What's that?
The...
I don't understand it. Thanks, though.
Yeah, the Roman word for the Isle of Wight is Vectis.
Is it?
And Gert is a local word meaning big. So it's a play...
Right, the Donald.
Exactly.
Fantastic. I'm right behind you there, sunshine. It's going to be great. So great. Vectis.
I mean, that's...
Yay! Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. It's something we just started doing them. I mean, we do news and all sorts of different stuff. We just started selling those T-shirts. And I said to my wife today, oh, my goodness, this is going to be perfect. He loves words.
Yeah, fab. So. Make Vectis good again. Fantastic.
So what do you think of that? What's going on in the US at the moment? Because, I mean, be honest, the things
I said
that
he'd get in.
The things that you said earlier, I'm quite surprised of you, of like the thing about Leveson and that kind of stuff. I'm surprised.
Well, why would somebody like me want to censor any literature?
Yeah,
I believe
so,
in...
no censorship. But then the internet
Not in the print media, no.
Right, okay.
No, why?
As long as it has some kind of redress, it's okay.
As long as it's legal, as long as they're not breaking any law.
So what about what's going on?
If they do, they're immediately dealt with. That's my thing.
Got it.
Unlike the fucking internet.
Which is a loose cannon.
You can, you know, come out with any kind of shit.
So what about the US? How do you feel about what's going on there?
I said he'd get... What, you mean Donald Trump?
That's his name, yeah.
Well, I said he'd get in a year before he got in. Me and Greeny, ask him what happened. I'm going to tell you, and then ask him.
Uh-huh,
so just
okay.
So, before you write. We're in the car going some fucking place or other. Uh-huh. Sat next to each other. Come on, we always listen to the 1 o'clock news, Radio 4, bang.
Uh-huh.
Put it on. Donald Trump has been selected as the candidate for the Republican Party. immediately, I said, there's the next president of the United States. Now, Green has worked in, he's lived in Texas, so he knows America. So he turned around and says, you took the words right out of my mouth. Everywhere we went, we were winding Peter, because, you know, I work in the art world, and everybody
right.
I know is a liberal.
Uh-huh, right.
Nobody right. thinks like me. You know? I just have to keep my mouth shut all the fucking time about shit. But this one I didn't. I thought, it's a fact, he's going to get in.
Yeah.
Everybody, well, not everybody knew. We were going around playing all that. Anyway, we had this routine, I'd be going, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. At the same time, he'd be going, USA,
uh-huh.
USA. And they're all going, you crazy guys, you know, that he's never going to get in, you know.
Wow.
But I knew he'd get in.
What made you so certain?
Because of this dichotomy between, because, you know, where we've got the London liberal bubble,
yeah.
In America, it's New York and California.
You want some more of this?
No, I'm all right.
Okay.
In America, it's the equivalent of our metropolitan bubble is the both coasts, isn't it?
Ah, yeah.
But that misses out a hell of a lot of America.
Which they rather patronisingly call the flyover states.
That's right.
They? Yeah.
Yeah. They've been sucking the piss out of those farm boys in Oklahoma for...
Yeah, right.
Ever since I can remember.
And this is the get-back time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You can't do that forever.
Yeah.
You can't piss over people's values forever.
Right. Right. And
you know, they'll put up with a lot.
And Brexit's the same as that here, do you think?
Brexit, I didn't vote because it's, you know, I'm a, we've established I'm an old cunt. I'm not saying that. We've established I'm a very old person. You know, I've got a 24-year-old daughter. So, and to be honest, in my case, it's far more convenient to be in the EU because my wife's French and half of my family is French, consequently, you know what I mean? So we go back, we don't have to, we love going to France, I love France.
Yeah.
I love Europe, I'm not anti-Europe, how can you be anti a continent? No, I'm anti some unelected jerk-off telling me how to live. That's right. You know what I mean? I believe that the most important reason I think that people voted for it is because I think the free movement of labour impacts badly on the poorest members of our society.
Right.
I think if we could get control of our borders again, I don't think people would be too bothered about staying in the EU. Do you know what a customs union is? Me neither. Does Jim Cheese at the works at the garage, does he know what a customs union is? Does he fuck?
Yeah.
All this about a second referendum.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we didn't understand what the EU is.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever understood? Who but an economist or a businessman needs to know about customs? So nobody knows. Who knows what a customs union is?
People
voted against it, I suspect.
Yeah.
Because, you know, where the free movement of labour drives down wages, the wages of local people who are not skilled.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also isn't good for the... Why should somebody from Poland live with 17 other guys in some shit boarding house in 17 in a room working for about now an hour?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not good for them.
Yeah.
And it's not good for the poor people of wherever it is they're picking fruit or whatever it is the
labour manual.
Do you know what I mean? It's not good for either. You know.
So you don't think you're not a fan?
I'm not saying you shouldn't go to another country and get a job. You know what I mean? Good luck to you if you want to do that. But
well, I guess that's that where people. I agree with you about this. The customs union, you know what it is. I guess it just means free movement of stuff around, doesn't it? But where it probably impacts people the most is easy access to going on holiday and mobile phones.
I've got a problem with that.
Really, isn't it?
But all this about the border with Ireland, it's never been a problem. It's always been there. Has it ever been a problem?
I thought that was a central problem when the, for the
wasn't
Troubles.
A problem when the I was out there during the Troubles in the 70s. I got on a train in Dublin and got off in Belfast.
Right.
No passport checks.
Yeah. Yeah.
No search.
Yeah.
Why should it be?
Yeah.
Why should it be any different? Why should that change?
Some
bureaucratic reason, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know about it because I don't know what they eat. But I'm with you know. I wasn't crazy about Tony Benn. You know, in many ways, he was a nutter, but. But he was right about that, you know. Who are you? And he says, as soon as I meet somebody that's in power, I ask two questions. Who are you? And how do I get rid of you?
Now, whatever
you think of Donald Trump,
he
can't do any more than 8 years.
True.
It'll be a dim memory. In 15 years.
Okay.
Whatever you think of him, love him or shove him, it's a democracy.
Yeah.
He's not there forever.
Yeah. I've never heard
calm down. It's not the. Well, all I would say is, it's not the end of the world. It's merely an election. It's merely, at worst, a disappointing election result.
Right.
And it's the same with leaving the EU.
Okay.
It's not the end of the world.
Right. Well, I guess the thing, as you just said, with the 8 years...
But it's better for me to be in it. All my relatives are fucking French.
Well, that's the thing with the Trump is, it is just 8 years. But I guess with the EU, the impact's longer than 8 years.
Who are you and how do I get rid of you?
Yeah, that's a brilliant quote. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've not heard that one from him.
Yeah, yeah. Tony Benn. Who are you and how do I get rid of
that's
you?
That's good.
Jean-Claude Juncker. Uh-huh. You can't.
Right, right.
There's the answer to Tony's question. Jean-Claude Juncker.
Uh-huh.
You can't.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, that's valid. That's valid.
I thought it was a democracy.
Yeah. Now,
ask him what we said about Trump. Go on. Verify it, Johnny. When we heard Donald, we were talking about that a year before.
Yeah.
So before he even had the nomination.
Right.
Be careful, we said. Don't laugh, you know. Yeah. That man is popular.
Right.
Whether you like him or not.
And yes. That was your experience in Texas.
Yeah, with friends and what we saw and talking to Americans. Yeah. Absolutely. It wasn't something stupid.
Ah.
Uh-huh. You know, there's a lot of America between LA and New York City.
There it is. There's a lot of people there. We were talking earlier about people patronisingly call it the flyover states, but my wife and I drove east coast to west coast and back again, and there's a lot of people and a lot of
life. I personally am a huge fan of Des Moines, Iowa, Rapid City, South Dakota.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Okay,
I'm not flippant about that. Mm. As soon as I saw his name on the app, We looked at it, didn't we, Johnny?
Yeah.
And people used to laugh at us.
Yeah,
so we'd
for a year.
This persona where we'd walk into hotel receptions, motorway service areas.
Give him the routine, Johnny. You do Donald, I'll do a US.
We used to walk in and people look at us. Before he got the nomination, we used to go,
USA! 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 You go.
Maybe you shouldn't laugh yet, you know?
Right.
Maybe this is actually happening.
Uh-huh.
But I've never seen people in this country so inordinately upset about something that happens 2,000 miles away that they haven't got. What business is it of ours?
I think that's very valid. I must say, since he's elected, I spent a lot of time listening, podcasts mostly, American media. Mm. Whereas previously, I didn't care less. I didn't care. But you're right, what's he going to do with anyone else? Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I watch it all with great interest. I'm sure I'll shut up. But, I've sat through, you know, George W. Bush, a man who didn't know where any country was. I've sat through Ronald Reagan, a consummate actor, but not known as a philosophising politician.
Uh-huh.
I've sat through Barry Goldwater, who scared the shit out of me
everybody.
As a teenager.
It was
1964 presidential candidate. Didn't win, but he got close. Right. And he was seriously into let's nuke the bastards, and he meant that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to, you know, that worried me. So I've seen it all, you know.
Yeah.
Come on, you know, it's America.
Yeah, that's right. The only president that the liberals in this country have ever approved of is Kennedy. Every one of them was gonna start the Third World War. Blow up the ear, blow up there, you know what I mean? None of them have been approved of by our liberal people.
Was that because Kennedy was cut short so they didn't have time to complain about
it? Well, no, at the time, they were right behind him at the time.
Okay.
As was, you know, Sinatra and everybody in Los Angeles. You know, both.
Yes, but that was a man who was inaugurated by pigs.
But that, exactly.
You know, he was a warmonger.
Yeah, no
in the way that all leaders of all strong countries are. Warmonger is the wrong word, but not afraid to use state intervention.
Yeah.
That'd be about
well, it did, who yeah. kicked off the Vietnam War? It was him, wasn't it?
No.
Who was it? Eisenhower.
Was it? Yeah, it was already going.
Was it? Okay.
He built it up quite a lot.
He did, he escalated it, yeah.
But he put all the special advisors in,
mm.
you know.
Right.
He's the one who put napalm in there, you know?
Wow, okay. That's not too liberal, is it?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll keep... Sorry, I shouldn't...
It's all right. Mm.
We discuss a lot of this. He and I travel. We travel the world mostly, don't we?
Yeah.
And I heard about it all last year. Yeah.
Yeah, we just do lots and lots of it. And the thing is, in our car, what we do is we discuss things.
Right. What else are you going to do?
The same. Well, you could just sit back and stare out the window. Uh-huh. We play the occasional bit of music when we can. We listen to Radio 4, we listen to the news, and we talk about it.
Uh-huh.
You know? That's what we do.
Yeah.
How would you spend it? You know?
So do you agree on when stories come up?
Not always.
Because it's an interesting world we're living in where you're not allowed to disagree anymore, are you?
No.
No, well, it is terrible, that. Yeah, yeah. I think that is... that's a product of
the... Do we disagree, John?
That's that.
Do we disagree?
Yeah.
No, we don't.
It's the Monty Python sketch, yeah, right, is it? I'm here for an argument.
No, it's that one, isn't it? There, you know, about... well, like I say, you know, you look... Like my daughter, you know, she's... It's not so much my daughter, her boyfriend, you know. He's a misery freak.
What do you mean?
Well, he looks at atrocities, you see, you know, around the world.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's this idea that we'll fix that, then we'll move on to that. Right. And, you know, as though people are like absorbent blocks. That all you've got to do is throw the nice stuff at them and they'll absorb it, you know. No credit is given to the complexity of the human being.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. That's what I say, why nobody's got an imagination big enough to envisage the extent of human evil.
Yeah.
They haven't got it because it's a choice.
Right.
With them now. They just gravitate towards people that will consolidate their personal prejudices.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And
put it this way, the only time I've ever been censored in my entire career, and it's happened twice on two different occasions, The Guardian.
Really? What, something you'd written?
Yeah.
Or Ryan?
Yeah, they took out the word Afrocentric.
Right, okay. Used in a context that would seem reasonable to you.
It was Pharrell Williams was doing a model, modelling some clothes. There were five people modelling clothes with a different look. One was Gareth Bale, he looked great. One was Pharrell Williams and a couple of other people that have slipped my mind right now. But it wasn't used in a... He was wearing a pair of leopard print loafers.
Yeah.
So I just mentioned, I went through his wardrobe and give him a good, you know, 8 out of 10, credit to the force, blah, blah, blah. But it finished up, you know, and those leopard print loafers are give the whole ensemble a nice Afrocentric touch.
Uh-huh.
You know, leopard.
Yeah. And they...
Afrocentric is not a racist term. They used to people like the Last Poets and you know, in the 60s, the first militant black people. Yeah, those guys. Uh-huh. They used that term all the time.
The Guardian decided they found it insulting.
They're probably some 17-year-old. Yeah, you can't say that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I don't think anybody at the Guardian... Let's not slag off the Guardian anyway.
Right.
You know, they do some good work, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
But they are the only public...
Interesting.
Without going too far into it, they are the only publication that's ever censored what I do.
Mm. Yeah. Which is obviously the exact opposite you'd expect. But so on the US thing, the Chicken Town on The Sopranos.
Oh yeah, fabulous!
How did that come about?
I've no idea. I was quite sort of, when that happened, I was sort of coming out of a long period in the wilderness years. You know, I'd been under the radar for a hell of a long time, so I didn't have any representation at all. I didn't have any management or. Not even an agent, you know. The work I did used to just come via the telephone for a long time, and it was in those days. Sorry, what was the question? So I don't know.
The Sopranos.
I don't know. They didn't ask permission.
They didn't.
But I don't care about that. I would have said,
yeah. So the first thing you knew was...
I was already a big fan.
Yeah, no, brilliant work.
So somebody on the production team must have been a big fan. Otherwise, why would they have known about it? Pardon?
What was the first you knew of it then?
The first?
How did you get to hear that it had been used in The Sopranos?
I saw it on the programme.
You serious?
Well, I was a big fan.
So you're watching it and then all of a sudden...
No, I was told that they were going to use a clip from evidently Chicken Town, and I was overjoyed. So, but I was watching it anyway. But it was in a particularly good episode. In fact, that... that was the last, that episode, it was the penultimate episode, so it was the last episode that used any music on the back credits at all.
Yeah.
Because if you remember the last episode, it just goes to black.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
Silence.
Yeah, yeah.
And the credits.
Yeah.
So that was the last time there was any stuff over the credits.
So that must have felt fantastic.
Everybody asked me that question. I'm so proud to have been involved in even in that small way. I'm you know, because that was a stupendous series, I thought.
You ever seen that French film a couple of years ago with the Marianne Cotillard in it, the Oscar-winning French actress? And it's a film about a woman who trains killer sharks in one of those leisure places,
okay.
You know, with dolphins and all that. Mm. And she gets her leg bitten off by a shark that she's trained. It ruins her life, and she needs a personal carer. She gets a guy come out of prison, and he's a boxer in Belgium. And I went to see it. It's a really good film, and still in French. And this guy's running down the road. He's got his headphones on. He's training for the boxing. So bang, out he comes. He's listening to John Cooper Clarke in English.
Really?
Yeah.
You told me that.
One of the high points of the film, not just because I know him, but he's really strong, this guy, suddenly. You know, the strange boxer, you know,
expression. Thanks for bringing that up, Johnny. I forgot all about that one, yeah.
And that's in...
And what was the work?
I can't remember. It wasn't Chicken Town, no. It might have been Beasley Street. Might have been that one.
Right.
Or Hell Fanatic.
The rhythm, you know?
Yeah.
And the power.
It
let you into his headphones. You just see him go...
Right.
Running down the road, so bang, it all comes out, you know, you're inside his head. Yeah.
And well, the contrast from French film to then English.
Yeah.
To soul.
It was also used in a Spanish art movie called.
So it goes a long way. But that one an award at the Palme d'Or at Cannes, that film. We're not talking just some minor arty film, good as they might be. We're talking mainstream, you know.
Right.
And it was in another Spanish art film. They translated it into Spanish, a Spanish punk back El Factor Pilgrim.
Right.
It's called.
Not sure what that translates to in English, but something to do with pilgrims.
The Pilgrim Factor. Right. It's called. It has got an English.
I guess now
it goes out under
that.
The English title when it's shown in England. Yeah.
Right.
Pilgrim Factor. And it's about a bunch of spick punks in London in the late 70s.
Mm.
Very good. It's a good film. Tasty. And they do a kind of beat group, be a punk group with guitars version of Evidently Chicken Town in Spanish.
So that, I mean, that Sopranos thing and these films, your French ones, that just must be remarkable.
Oh, it's fabulous, yeah, to know that you've got that reach.
Yeah.
It's great because, you know, it kind of counterbalances the Bard of Salford. A great deal has been made of the fact that I come from, you know, the north of England.
Right, you think that's a restricting thing?
Not anymore, but I did do, you know, it was always my intention to move out of Manchester. You know, if you wanted to make it in art or music when we were starting, people of our age, you know, me and Johnny, it just went without saying that, well, you better go to London then. That's where the business is. That's where the Tin Pan Alley is.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where the opportunities are, you know. You can put yourself to the test and do that, or you can stay in Manchester and just be regarded as a local eccentric, which to me, you know, would have fucking give up.
We played in Finland. About 3
Finland,
years
even
literary,
the non, yeah.
A literary festival in a northern town up in the Arctic Circle on Midsummer's Day, and John played to an open square, 2,500 people, free.
Right.
Just did his thing in his normal way in English. The whole crowd knew his stuff.
Wow.
And we're playing. Incredible, isn't it? Roaring in English. 2,500 Finns.
Right.
It wasn't a festival, it was just their town literary festival.
Right.
I found out afterwards that Finland buys more books per capita than any country.
That's great, wow.
But they're ears, and they're following it. They know the stuff, the new stuff. Yeah. They're listening and they're understanding.
Yeah, second language, of course, as well.
Yeah,
incredible,
yeah.
Isn't it?
My point is just to add to you is that it ain't just Salford and the ripples of Salford.
No,
Salford.
No, it does have an international reach.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Which a lot of English people have don't realise. Mm. They still go back to that Salford thing, don't
right.
they?
John? Yeah, they do, yes. Lazy.
Good as that is.
Yeah, good as that is, yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'm not ashamed of it, but it was always my intention to move out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Is
that just because of you wanted to explore? You just want to have a different perspective on the world.
No, I wanted to make it in show business
because of Bob Hope.
Yeah,
exactly.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah, exactly that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I didn't want to spend my life appearing in front of 15 people at the local library. That's not why I got here. Started writing poetry. Uh-huh. To be an international man of mystery.
So when you're standing in a Finnish square talking to 2,500 people, what's going through your head? Or your
well,
heart,
I'm thinking,
or?
Nothing.
Just deliver
the job at hand. It's a kind of it's semi automatic what I do, but I've got to be alive to what's happening now. You know, uh-huh. So I'm not. I'm never sort of, my mind isn't wandering about, oh, isn't this great and all right. that, you know, there's a job to do, you know. It's just, all I'm thinking about is this hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, so I'm not even thinking about it, it's a kind of sense.
And when you get off,
it's a kind of sense, it's a matter of tuning in, it's not really thought, isn't. Thought doesn't come into it, actually. I'm glad you brought that. I've never even thought about that before. But really, thought gets suspended.
Yeah.
You know, I'm singing the song in the same as a singer, you know. In fact, you know, I remember Don Everly, you know, God rest his soul. No, it's Philip. Philip died, isn't it? Philip. When they got back together and... Somebody was, it was in an interview, and he was saying, you know, how do you sing those heartbreaking songs without bursting into tears? You know, everybody right. else, it's like Bob.
Right.
Everybody's laughing with the Everlys.
Right.
Chicks are striking their eyes out, you know, but the Everlys. And Philip says, well, you can't think about the content of the song. You can't, because you may well be overcome with it. But those are incredibly... heartbreaking songs sometimes, ebony eyes, you know. But what he says, no, you've just got to get through that song. You've just got to do that song as best as it can possibly be presented. And it's down to how do I finesse this note?
Right.
You know what I mean? How do I finesse this next note?
Mm.
And that it's the mechanics of it. Is the only thing you can really give any concentration to.
Yeah.
You can't be having ideas. Well, you do get ideas.
But you...
It's like the two sides of your brain. Like the both hemispheres of your brain are somehow apart, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how to... I'm not very good at self-analysis, but thought doesn't really come into it.
Okay.
And I don't really know how to answer that question, actually, kid. What goes through my head at the time of...
Well, afterwards, doing a gig. Do you then, in that sort of wanting to be an entertainer for people or in the Bob Hope way, do you then think afterwards, wow, that's quite incredible. It's 2,500 people in Finland speaking their second language and they understood and were speaking
yes,
back everything.
It never ceases to amaze me that, yeah, the fact that I can work in non-Anglophone countries.
Mm.
It's to me amazing because there isn't any other, there's nothing else you could sort of divert yourself with, you know what I mean, if you're not getting do you know what I mean?
Mm.
There aren't, it's just a whole language, the whole thing is around language, so it's... Mm. Incredible, a miracle.
Mm.
Like
yeah,
I say,
he says that, and but I will tell you, Simon, that in our travels, something that we might have heard on the radio, something we might have read.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Or we've been talking about someone we've met during our travel to that day's town.
Yeah,
it's amazing how often I will note from the wings that will come up
right.
in that night's performance
right.
and be
that's right.
specific to those 24 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether that's thought or not, I can't answer.
Well, it's
I
prep, isn't it? It's in the prep, really.
It's
that,
always
isn't it?
Relevant. Uh-huh. It's not yeah. like, I'm amazed it comes up because he hasn't sat and worked out, oh, I'll say that and put that in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but it's part of the.
Because he's improvising.
Yeah.
But it's obviously taking root, so as he's. Doing, you know,
it goes through the machinery.
It's yeah. melding in.
Yeah. That's right. It sort of gets into the machinery.
It's terribly uh-huh. relevant at uh-huh. times. Terribly.
Yeah.
Right.
Not just Aloe Leeds.
Right.
No. I couldn't
right.
do it.
Right.
Like that.
Okay.
It's far more articulate and specific.
Yeah. You know? Well, we've had an incredible chat. It's been fantastic.
I hope so.
And there's so much more I could ask you about. I'm not going to, though. One thought that did strike me was my introduction to your work was John Peel, you know, listening
uh-huh.
in the early hours. And he's had such an enormous impact on a generation's cultural understanding, the ability to reference stuff that people had... You know, you're sitting in your bedroom, wherever you are, the whole of the UK and beyond was then brought to you, orally brought to you. But I know there was a period where he was sort of recognised, but it sort of feels like he hasn't properly been recognised.
Who?
John Peel.
Oh, he has. He's got a special studio at the new, hasn't he? The John Peel Studios
yeah.
and things like that. Oh, it's revered in... On, say Six Music, all the people on Six Music. Very rare that a pop group from a certain period doesn't cite John Peel as
yeah.
being an invaluable contribution to the alternative rock scene. But that's my point. It was very, that was very much his thing, alternative.
Yeah.
And,
was opening your ears to things that you never thought.
Well, that's right, yeah, but I'm a bit. To be honest, I'm a bit of kind of... My tastes were formed well before John
right.
Peel, so I've never really gone... I've never been very investigative. In fact, I am curiously incurious about seeking out modern music.
Life. Right.
Because I'll never have every Elvis record I want.
Uh-huh.
Why would I want to hear Jimmy and the Bozos from fucking...
I'll look them up.
You know. Yeah. From fucking Colwyn Bay. Do you know what I mean? Just
like
because
Terry
and the Idiots. You know, no, now you're talking. Now you're talking. If you can't take it, don't stem the pace. Terry and the Idiots. No, but the thing was, I mean, call me ungrateful, but and, I mean, this is a terrible thing, really. I was grateful to when my first album came out, he played one track of it every day. It was on every day of the week, wasn't it?
Right.
12 midnight, and he played one track off my album for a week. So I don't want to come over like an ingrate,
uh-huh.
you know, because I'm not. But at the time, I was a bit snarky about it. I thought, as a person who wanted to go mass.
Uh-huh. Right.
I thought it put me in a bit of a ghetto.
Right.
Because I just thought, you know, because there is a part of John Peel that was defined in opposition.
Definitely true.
He would play what... The criteria was, what nobody will play.
Yeah.
Here, give it here, I'll play it.
That's
you
true.
Know, and that
yeah.
really was his raison d'etre.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even his biggest fans would have to admit to
yeah.
that. A great deal of that. I didn't listen to it very much. It was unlistenable to me, most
uh-huh.
of it.
Right.
40 minutes out of every hour was torture. It was in the days of cassettes, wasn't it? So
yeah.
everybody used to send the cassettes in and he'd play them if he hadn't even heard them sometimes.
Uh-huh. Right.
Just to, you know, come out, you know, to consolidate his position as
right.
the subversive.
Right. The curator
in the behemoth of the BBC, you
yeah.
know, the
yeah.
voice of the
yeah.
Of the rebel, you know.
Yeah, but they yeah brought variety.
But saying that, you know, he did provide a platform for some very worthy people that were worthy of it.
Mm.
Nobody's wrong all the time,
mm.
especially not with that slap happy technique.
None less than your mate Smithy.
Smithy, yeah, oh, Smith, oh the
Smith.
Late Mark
yeah,
Smith.
Yeah. Yeah.
The late Mark Smith, they were his favourite band.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, and I totally agree
with what he used to say about the fall. You're always different, always the same.
Right.
I mean, if there's one quote of Peel is that I will go along with 100%, that's, he nailed them there.
Yeah.
Always different, always the same.
Yeah.
I miss that guy. Not Smithy, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Do you spend a lot of time with them?
Over the years, yeah, loads. Yeah.
I mean, I know you supported them a lot.
I did, I never supported them.
Sorry, opening out. Sorry, is that insulting?
I never supported the fall.
Right.
I was their special guest a couple of times.
Okay, right. Yeah.
No, I was very adamant about that.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
I'll support Bruce Springsteen. I'll support Bruce Springsteen. I'll support the Rolling Stones, but Mark Smith.
Right, right.
Write me in as the special guest. Well, I do miss him, though. You know, the world just got a bit more compliant.
Right, right.
With the death of Mark Smith.
Yeah, right, because he was good at being awkward.
You could rely on him for for a bit of controversy.
Right. Well, that's brilliant. Thank you very much for your time. It's incredibly generous. It's been
don't really mention it, kid. We're talking about my favourite subject, me.
That's very good. Thanks again.
My pleasure, kid.